In the Gospel according to Mark, chapter 1, at verse 21. And they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day, he entered into the synagogue and taught. And they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority, and not as the scribes. And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God." Now look back, if you will, for a moment at verse 23, the last part and the beginning of verse 24. A man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, "Let us alone." In a day when more people should be concerned about the cause of Christ than ever before, many people are becoming all the more unconcerned. Apathy and indifference characterize the church of the 20th century. There was never a time when there needed to be a response to the call, an answer to the challenge, as is needed in 1973. There has never been a time when there were more church members universally than there are today. And yet, sadly enough, only a very small percentage. I read somewhere recently that on any given Sunday morning, fewer than 10% of the population will be in church anywhere. Far smaller on Sunday night. This is an hour of indifference and unconcernedness on the part of many Christians. In a day when we should lift high the standard against the devil, all too many are letting down the barrier. We are making it easier than ever before for people to join the church. I suppose there's not an organization in all the world where a man can be a member of and treat it like he does the church and still be a member. That is a sad note, because I am of this persuasion that the church deserves and demands first place in the life of every Christian. Too many of us have the same attitude that the unclean spirit had in my text. Too many of us respond to Jesus like the unclean spirit, who said, "Let me alone. Let me alone." My message this morning is entitled, "Let Us Alone." Then I've put a subtitle to it, "The Sin of the Status Quo." Then I put a second sub to it, "The Day the Devil Went to Church." Now, it's interesting to note that every time Jesus went to church, he stirred up the devil. Now, you didn't know that the devil went to church, did you? This might shock some of you. The devil has a better record of attendance than some of you have. The devil's here every Wednesday night. He's here every Sunday night. He's here every Sunday morning. I repeat, the devil has a far better church record than many members of the church in 1973. Jesus was a devil disturber. I know that most people want a pastor who never raises his voice nor even his eyebrows. everything to be calm and everything to be so quiet and dead that it resembles a graveyard. I don't want a church like that. Jesus doesn't want a church like that. I repeat, Jesus disturbed the devil every time he went to church. The trouble with most of us is this: we are at peace with the world, with the flesh, and with the devil. When is the last time we put the devil to flight? When is the last time that we lifted up a standard against Satan? We must recognize that Satan, in the closing days of this age, is out to deceive and to destroy every believer. And only by the grace of God will he not destroy us. I said a while ago that Jesus was a devil disturber, and he was. Why, Jesus disturbed the devil at his birth. When he was born in Bethlehem of Judea, the wise men came from the east, and they had this question: where is he who is born King of the Jews? And when Herod heard that someone had been born King of the Jews, the unclean spirit of Satan within Herod motivated him to issue a decree to put to death all the male children under 2 years of age. Jesus disturbed the devil when he was born. Jesus disturbed the devil in the hour of his temptation. Three times Jesus said, "It is written." The Bible tells us that after Jesus had pulled the sword of the Spirit on Satan, that the devil departed from him for a season. Jesus disturbed the devil in his teaching. I have a classic example in my text. When Jesus taught with authority the truth of God, the unclean spirit of Satan rose up in opposition and cried out, "Let us alone, for what have we to do with thee?" The devil was disturbed when Jesus died on the cross. Now here's a paradox in a measure. You see, the devil thought he was winning when he put Christ to death on the tree. But actually, at the cross, Satan suffered the greatest defeat that he's ever suffered up to this hour. For at the cross, Jesus Christ put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. At the cross, there was a bringing together of God and man, not in justice, but in mercy and love. And Satan cannot stand the sight or the thought of the cross. It disturbs him greatly. Oh, but there is coming a day when Jesus Christ will disturb the devil more than ever. The Bible tells us that he will come, and in the brightness of his coming, at the battle of Armageddon, the sword shall go forth out of his mouth, and he shall smite the enemy. And I like the picture that old John gives us in the Revelation, when the angel of the Lord comes down with a great chain in his hand and binds up Satan and casts him into the bottomless pit. He'll disturb the devil then. I am of this persuasion that we ought to disturb Satan. We ought to disturb the devil every time we come to worship. The devil doesn't want you to worship. But we should come to worship with such great enthusiasm. We should come to worship in such great numbers that we would put the devil to flight, and there would not be room in the house of God for the evil one. We ought to disturb the devil every time we get down on our knees to pray. Like the little chorus has it, Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. I like the way the little girl interpreted that when she went home after church on Sunday. And that night, as she said her prayers, her mother always stood by while she prayed, and it seemed she prayed a little bit longer. When she was finished praying, her mother said to her, "Darling, why did you pray so long tonight?" And the little girl said, "Mother, I heard the preacher say, Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. And I just wanted to make him tremble a little bit longer." Beloved, if you want to make the devil tremble, get on your knees and talk to God. Learn how to pray, and that'll disturb the devil. We ought to disturb the devil when we come to bring our investment of our tithes and our monies into the cause of Christ. The devil doesn't want you to give. Reminds me of the story of the farmer who invited the preacher home with him. Back in the early days when they used to keep the hams in the smokehouse. How many of you have ever seen a real smokehouse? I don't mean the kind you puff in. I mean the kind you hang up hams in. Well, I thought you looked like this from the country. So the farmer invited the pastor home after Sunday dinner, and after they'd eaten and talked about the things of the Lord, the farmer felt impressed to give the pastor a ham. I wish we had smokehouses now. And so as they went into the smokehouse, the first ham the farmer saw was just a little old dried up, shriveled up ham. The devil said, "Give him that one." The farmer didn't think that was quite enough, so he saw one that was a little bit bigger, and the devil said, "Give him that one." That went on for a while. And finally the farmer said, "Devil, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to give this preacher every ham in this smokehouse." The devil doesn't want you to give to the cause of Christ. It disturbs him. You know, we disturb the devil when we go out evangelizing, knocking on doors, winning people to Christ. This disturbs Satan. He doesn't want you to visit. Satan doesn't want you to be a soul winner. We should make up our mind that we're going to give the devil a black eye on every corner. We ought to have the philosophy of old Sam Pete Jones. Once a lawyer, one of the most brilliant lawyers in the state of Georgia. And then strong drink got a hold to him. And he went into the gutter. I don't have time, but I'm going to take time to tell you again about his conversion. I listened to it last night on a record by Dr. J. Frank Norris. Preached many years ago, and Dr. Norris said, "Well, I heard that Sam Pete Jones, the great circuit-riding preacher of the Methodist denomination, was going to be down in Waco," and said, "We lived at that time about 35 miles from Waco. So I hooked up old Bess, and we rode down 35 miles to hear Sam Pete Jones." Dr. Norris said, "When I arrived, I was not very much impressed with him. A little short fella, sawed off, not anything promising about him to look at him. And there must have been several thousand people who had gathered to hear Sam Jones." And Dr. Norris said he began and he talked and he just kept on talking, and I wasn't very much impressed. And I said to myself, "Well, when I get out back out to the stable, I'm going to tell Bess we wasted our money. Didn't cost us but a dime to park here. Bed, bunk, bugs and everything. Just a dime." But then Dr. Norris said, "Sam Jones," said, "folks, let me tell you about how I received my salvation. I was the worst drunkard in the county. Why, I'd come to nothing physically and financially and spiritually in every way. And I shall never forget," he says, "that I was in the bar when he closed that night. The bartender kicked me out the back door. I had vomit, my own vomit and filth all over me. My hair was matted, my beard had grown for a month. And there came a heavy snow that night, and I almost froze to death. The next morning when I halfway sobered up, I knocked on the back door of the bar room. And I asked the bartender to please give me just one more drink. Just one more. And old Sam Jones said, I stood there and took that drink. And as I raised that glass to my lips, I looked in the mirror and I said, is that all? Is that all that's left of Sam Jones? Matted hair and snow and vomit all over him? I threw that glass of liquor down, and I fell on my face, and everybody in the bar thought I was having a heart attack. They thought I was sick, and the bartender came over and said, "Sam, what can I do for you?" And Sam said, "If you'll just help me up." And old Sam Jones said, "I went down to a clother that I knew in my better days. And I said to him, 'Friend, God did something for me. I want you to let me have a suit of clothes. I want you to let me have a hat and a shirt and a tie and a pair of shoes.'" And he did. And Sam Jones says, "When I left, he put a $100 bill in my hand. And I went to the barber shop. And I said to the barber, 'I want you to cut my hair and shave me, and I want you to let me take a bath, and I've got the money to pay for it.'" So he did, and he put on the clean hat and the clean shirt, the clean suit and the clean tie, and he went out to that place where he'd left his wife and daughter and children and abused them and beaten them and robbed them of everything. And he knocked on the door. And his wife came to the door, and lo and behold, she did not recognize her husband. She started to shut the door, and Sam Jones said, "Wait a minute, honey. God has done something for me. God has given you a new husband and your children a new daddy." That's what I'm talking to you about this morning. Only God can do that. And old Sam Jones said, "From that day on, I made up my mind that as long as I had teeth in my head, I was going to chew on the devil. And when I lost my teeth, I was going to try my best to gum him to death." That's the philosophy we need in this hour. The same spirit to fight against the devil. Because the unclean spirit of Satan is busy in the world today. The unclean spirit cries out in the church today, "Let us alone! Let us alone!" What is that unclean spirit in the church today? It's the spirit that opposes evangelism. Why should we buy buses and go out and get little street urchins in? A lot of people don't believe in that. Some of you don't believe in that. That's the unclean spirit in you. The unclean spirit in the church today is the spirit that opposes expansion. It's the spirit that says, "We have a nice building. Why should we invest money for another building?" It's the spirit that says, "Our family is all in, and our children and our grandchildren. Why should we go out and reach anybody else?" That's the unclean spirit. It's the spirit that says, "Lord, bless me, my four and no more." It is the spirit of selfishness in the church today. This is the spirit that would turn the church into a graveyard. The devil wants a dead program, a dead song service, a dead preaching hour. This is the spirit that would build a fence around the church and put up a big sign on the front of it, "Do not disturb." That's the unclean spirit. That's the spirit that would say, "Let the pastor do it." I read about one fellow that back in the days before air travel was so prevalent, he went down to the train station. Every Monday morning, this pastor would go down to the train station. And finally, one of the workers asked him after they saw him several weeks, "Why is it you come down to the train station every Monday? I don't see you taking a train. I don't see you meeting anybody." He said, "Well, it's like this. I just like to see one thing get off that I don't have to push. Just one thing." The spirit of the unclean says, "Let the pastor do it." That's the spirit that would keep David at home instead of going on the battlefield to fight Goliath. That's the spirit that would condemn and criticize any movement toward progress. That's the spirit that would give up in the face of opposition. The unclean spirit is the spirit that says, "Well, I'll just sit back and wait and see what's going to happen." This is the unclean spirit of defeat in the church today. That's the spirit that would rather see a man possessed of the devil than to see the hog market upset. And you know the story in the New Testament about that. That's the spirit that says, if men go to hell, who cares? That's the spirit that says, stay home instead of going to church. And that's the spirit that keeps you at home when you ought to be in the house of God. That's the unclean spirit. Such is the spirit that's in the church today. The greatest sin of the church in this hour is apathy and indifference. If men go to hell, who cares? Let us alone, we cry. Let us alone. You know, this is the response that we get when we ask some of you to teach a Sunday school class. You say, let me alone. This is the same response that we get when we ask you to sing in the choir. Let me alone. That's the same response we get when we ask you to go out on the bus route. Let me alone. That's the same spirit that cries out, and the same response when we call for involvement within the church's ministry. Let me alone. Let me alone. After all, I've got to look out after my family. I don't have time to visit and teach and rehearse in the choir and go on the bus route. Let me alone. That's the unclean spirit that cries out from the hearts of many church members today. Don't bother me. I must meet my own financial obligations. I can't afford to give to the church. Let me alone. I must have some time for pleasure and recreation, and Sunday's my only day off. Let me alone. Let me alone. I'd be ashamed to admit it if the Lord's Day was the only day I could take off for pleasure. You take off for everything else you want to on another day. Don't take God's day for pleasure and rob yourself of the blessing of being in the house of God. It's wrong for you to do it, and you are missing the blessing by doing it. Let me make one thing clear this morning. I will not let you alone. I will not let you alone as long as there are classes to be taught. I will not let you alone as long as there are boys and girls to be reached. I will not let you alone as long as there are families in this community without Christ. I will not let you alone. Because I have the bread of life and men are starving to death. And I have the water of life and men are thirsting to death. I will not let you alone. I do not intend to listen to the cry of the unclean spirit that cries out to the pastor, let me alone. I will not let you alone as long as there is one soul that's yet lost. I will not let you alone. The thing we need in the church today is the presence of Christ, because you see, Christ disturbs the status quo. Christ disturbs the devil. Christ speaks with authority. That's what we need in this hour, a voice of authority. And I believe that voice would be vested in the pastor of the church. So I repeat, I will not let you alone. As long as there's a job to do for Christ and souls are dying around the world, I will not, because I cannot let you alone. Thank God there have been some who did not cry, let us alone. And the call came to John Wesley to preach the gospel. He began to preach with the power of God upon his ministry. I wish we could go yonder to the little room in Oxford in England where the Wesley boys got on their knees and they had a revival prayer meeting, and God sent the power of the Holy Spirit upon them. And they shook Europe and America for Christ. His denomination ostracized him. They said, we don't want a preacher like that. His denomination and church put him out. But John Wesley kept on preaching. You see, there was a time when the Methodists had fire. Now they don't even have smoke, for the most part. John Wesley said, and I quote, if I had 300 men who feared nothing but God, hated nothing but sin, and knew nothing but Christ and Him crucified, I could turn this world upside down. Let me paraphrase that, mister. I'm speaking to you now, not John Wesley. If I had 100 men, if I had 100 men who would put their hand in my hand and say, Pastor, I fear nothing but God, and I hate nothing but sin, and I'll know nothing but Christ, we could turn this city upside down for the Savior. Amen. We could set Tarrant County on fire for God. If I had 100 men that would be willing to go to their bank and say, Mr., loan me $1,000. We've got to build a church. We've got to buy some property. We could do it. We could do it. If I had that 100 men, I'd be willing to start out any day to turn this city upside down for Christ. 100 men who fear no one but God, who hate nothing but sin, who know nothing but Christ. Martin Luther didn't say, let me alone. He nailed his 95 theses upon the door and cried aloud, the just shall live by faith. When they sent from Rome to get Martin Luther to recant and turn his back on his newfound faith, Martin Luther didn't say, let me alone. Martin Luther said, here I stand. I cannot recant. So help me God. That's what we need today. Queen Esther didn't say, let me alone. When the time came for her to go before the king in an effort to save her people, Queen Esther said, I'll go. I'll go, and if I perish, I perish, but I'll go. That's the spirit we need today. The Apostle Paul didn't say, leave me alone. You remember on his final trip to the city of Jerusalem, they said, no, Paul, don't go. Don't go, and one fellow went to the extreme and bound Paul's a girdle about him and said, now the man who owns this girdle will be bound in Jerusalem. What did Paul say? Let me alone. I won't go to Jerusalem. No, Paul said, I am ready not only to be bound, but to die for Christ in Jerusalem. That's the 100 men I'm looking for. Some men who would be willing to say, I do not fear being bound. I'm ready to be bound, and I'm ready to die for Christ in Fort Worth. Ronnie Harper didn't say to me, Pastor, let me alone, when I asked him to take the young married class that had a half a dozen in it. This morning they had 30. Because he didn't say, Preacher, let me alone. I've got a job and I've got a family and I've got children and I've got a wife and I've got a house and I've got all of these things to do. No, he said, I'll do it by the grace of God. And 30 people showed up to hear it this morning. That's what I'm talking to you about. If I had 100 men that said, again, I repeat, I fear nothing but God. I hate nothing but sin. And I know nothing but Christ. We could turn this city upside down for Jesus. But no, too many of us are saying like the unclean spirit, let us alone, let us alone, let us alone. But I repeat, I will not let you alone. I will not let you alone. because I've got a burden on my heart and I've got a vision in my soul, I will not let you alone. I will not let you alone, mister. I will not let you alone. And then I have a footnote to my message and I'll be through. God will not let you alone. My unsaved friend, he'll keep on ringing the bell. He'll keep on sounding the alarm. He'll keep on sending the word. God's not going to let you alone. My fellow church member, God will not let you alone until you surrender fully to him. Oh, I know you can turn it aside this morning and you can tune the pastor out. But while you get it home tonight alone, and the lights are all out and everybody's quiet, God's not going to let you alone, church member, until you surrender fully to him. I repeat, I'm not going to let you alone as your pastor. And God is not going to let you alone as long as there's one soul that needs to be reached by this church. We cannot, we must not let you alone. Let us stand.